Malt is making a sandwich, so I'm going to set up the next scene. Charlotte's Web, 1973, screenwriters, Earl Hammer Jr., based upon E.B. White's book, Charlotte's Farewell, Spider Charlotte's voice of Debbie Reynolds, touching farewell speech to Wilbur, voice of Henry Gibson, after his fate has been secured by earning a special prize at the fair. There's three people on this monologue. We will start with the first person. This monologue is worth 10 points. Melly is the first Charlotte. Take it away, Melly.
I'm a little tired, perhaps, but I feel peaceful. Your success today was, to a small degree, my success. You'll live now, secure and safe. And you've been my friend. That in itself is a tremendous thing. After all, what's a life anyway? We're born, we live a little while, and we die. A spider's life can't help being something of a mess with all this trapping and eating flies. By helping you, perhaps I was trying to lift up my own life a trifle. I will not be going back to the barn. I'm done for, Wilbur. In a while, I'll be dead. I haven't even the strength enough to climb down into the crate.
Next up, Janie Girlie 07.
I'm a little tired, perhaps, but I feel peaceful. Your success today was, to a small degree, my success. You will live now, secure and safe. You have been my friend. That in itself is a tremendous thing. After all, what is life anyway? We're born, we live a little while, and we die. A spider's life can't help being something of a mess of all this trapping and eating flies. By helping you, perhaps, I was trying to lift up my own life a trifle. I will not be going back to the barn. I am done for, Wilbur. In a while, I'll be dead. I haven't even the strength to climb down into the crate.
And Heaven Incarnate playing Charlotte up next.
I'm a little tired, perhaps. But I feel peaceful. Your success today was, to a small degree, my success. You will live now, secure and safe. You've been my friend, and that in itself is a tremendous thing. After all, what's a life anyway? We're born, we live a little while, we die. A spider's life can't help being something of a mess. With all this trapping and needing flies. By helping you, perhaps I was trying to lift up my own life. I will not be going back to the barn. I'm done for, Wilbur. In a while, I'll be dead. I haven't even strength enough to climb down into the...
All right, that was the Charlotte's Web-ers.
Ooh.
Let's start with Melly. Melly, you sounded... That was depressing, first of all. Your voice was weak, and it made me depressed, which I guess is a good thing. I kind of... Why do all children's stories have some sort of animal dying in them? Like, seriously. You don't know, do you?
Oh, wait, are you actually asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. To teach children...
that life sucks?
To let go?
Mally, I kind of wish you had started sounding sick as well. You sounded really normal at first and then sort of suddenly transitioned into it. But then at the end, when you started sounding disoriented, I thought that had a lot to it. And I thought when you were sounding sick, it was believable and made me depressed. What did you think about Mally?
I really loved Mally's monologue. I thought that it had really good emotion and it totally made me tear up, which is good. And yeah, pretty much I don't have anything bad to say about it. I thought that you pulled off the death of it well without, you know, killing us.
Janie girl, it sounded kind of reedy to me, and there was a bit in the middle on Spider's life where I couldn't understand what you were saying. I thought that this was the weakest of the three, honestly. What did you think about Janie's?
I sadly agree. I think it sounded a little too happy and a bit rushed, which, like, for, like, such a dramatic moment, like, it really needed, like, to have a bit more of a pace to it, like, a little bit more sadness, I guess.
Yeah, normally you're really strong, though, and this just wasn't your week, I guess. Let's talk about Heaven.
Alright. Heaven, I thought that you sounded really tired at the beginning of it, and, like, you had really good emotion, and, like, I did really like it, but the sudden cough fit, like, it totally, like, broke the moment for me, and it turned it from, like, something kind of sad and dramatic to something just kind of funny.
I thought it was a little bit, like, inappropriate for a children's story, too. I actually bought that voice as a female spider, first of all. Like, I thought you actually fit that role well. Your dyingness freaked me out. Like, I don't know how you sounded. I don't know how you sounded so sick, but it made me feel physically ill, and it was really strong. I liked the sadness after the coughing fit. It was like, oh, shit, I really am dying. I liked your read the best, except the coughing for me. Really, I think that was a little... I think because the burp worked well last week, you added the coughing this week, and I don't know. The coughing sort of took me out of it a little. It was really close for me between you and Mally, though. Did you have anything else you want to say about Heavens? I kind of interrupted and cut you off.
No, you didn't. I don't think you did. Okay. I guess I have a couple things, I guess. I really did like that fade at the end. And yeah, like, I really did love your read of it. I just feel like the coughing took me totally out of it. And, like, at first I was like, oh, wow, sudden coughing fit, like, that's dramatic, but then it just kind of kept going, and I was like, is he actually having a coughing fit, and did he just keep it?
I doubt it.
Yeah, I know. But I guess that's it, so.
Did you pick a winner?
I did.
I did as well. Who'd you pick?
I picked Mally.
I picked Mally as well, and really, as much as I liked Mally's read, I liked Heaven's a little bit better, but that coughing fit I thought was a little bit too far. Mally, you get all the points for your team. It is 10 points, and they go to Team Oscar. Team Oscar at 94.5 now.
Ooh.
Aw, shucks.
They're catching up.
They are catching up. Nobody's on Female Trouble, so you can do that one. Would have been worth 4 points. 1974, John Waters, screenwriter. Astonishing Execution Speech. Don Davenport's Astonishing Acceptance Speech. On the Electric Chair Before Execution featured a shockingly prescient speech on the cult of media criminal celebrity. Whenever you're ready, Malt.
Alright, one second. Just quickly reading through.
Those monologues will just depress me. Good job, you guys.
Yeah, very good job with
really
that.
Really bummed out now.
Alright, I think I'm ready.
Okay.
I'd like to thank all the wonderful people that made this great moment in my life come true. My daughter Taffy, who died in order to further my career. My friends Chiclet and Conchetta, who should be here with me today. All the fans who died so fashionably and gallantly at my nightclub act. And especially all those wonderful people who were kind enough to read about me in the newspapers and watch me on the television news shows. Without all of you, my career would never have gotten this far. It was you that I burn for, and it is you that I will die for. Please remember, I love every fucking one of you.
No one plays a drag queen better than you. Kudos.
Woo.
Next up, Jaws, 1975, screenwriters Peter Benchley, Carl Gottlieb. The Indianapolis monologue, it's a harrowing recollection of sharks after the sinking of the USS Indianapolis. In a long and memorable monologue, Quint recollected how he was a World War II sailor and his carrier was delivering the Hiroshima A-bomb to Japan and was en route home. The ill-fated USS Indianapolis was sunk in 12 minutes by two torpedoes shot from a Japanese submarine, and about 1,100 men went into the shark-infested water for about 4 days. He remembered the grisly, hideous story of the ill-fated crew during an attack of swarming sharks that began a half hour later, in which 800 sailors perished, only 316 men survived in shark-infested waters. Are you ready to be creeped out by shark stories?
I am.
Well, Temp is up first. This monologue, by the way, worth 18 points. Yeah, let's listen.
Japanese submarine slammed two torpedoes into our side, Chief. We was coming back from the island of Tini and Tenleite. Just delivered the bomb. The Hiroshima bomb. 1,100 men went into the water. Vessel went down in 12 minutes. Didn't see the first shark for about half an hour. A tiger, 13-footer. You know how you know that when you're in the water, Chief? You tell by looking from the dorsal to the tail. Well, what we didn't know was our bomb mission had been so secret. No distress signal had been sent yet. They didn't even list us overdue for a week. Very first light, Chief, sharks come cruising. So we formed ourselves into tight groups. You know, it was kind of like old squares in the battle, like that you see in the calendar named the Battle of Waterloo. The idea was the shark comes to the nearest man, and he starts pounding and hollering and screaming. Sometimes the shark go away. Sometimes he wouldn't go away. Sometimes that shark, he looks right into you, right into your eyes. You know, the thing about a shark, he's got lifeless eyes. Black eyes, like a doll's eyes. When he comes after you, he doesn't seem to be living until he bites you. And those black eyes roll over white and then, And you hear that terrible, high-pitched scream, and the ocean turns red, and in spite of all the pounding and the hollering, and they all come in and rip you to pieces. You know, by the end of that first dawn, we lost 100 men. I don't know how many sharks, maybe 1,000. I don't know how many men. They average 6 an hour. On Thursday morning, Chief, I bumped into a friend of mine, Herbie Robinson from Cleveland. Baseball player. Boatswain's mate. I thought he was asleep. Reached over to wake him. Bobbed up, down in the water, just like a kind of top. Upended. Well, he'd been bitten in half below the waist. Noon the fifth day, Mr. Cooper, a Lockheed Ventura saw us. He swung in low and he saw us. He was a young pilot, a lot younger than Mr. Hooper. Anyway, he saw us and he come in low, and 3 hours later, a big fat PBY comes down and started to pick us up. You know, that was the time I was most frightened, waiting for my turn. I'll never put on a life jacket again. So 1,100 men went in the water. 316 men came out. The sharks took the rest. June the 29th, 1945. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
Next up, we have on this monologue, read to me. Take it away, read to me.
A Japanese submarine slammed two torpedoes into our side, Chief. We was coming back from the island of Tinian to Lady. Just delivered the bomb. The Hiroshima bomb. 1,100 men went into the water. Vessel went down in 12 minutes. Didn't see the first shark for about half an hour. A tiger. 13-footer. You know how you know that when you're in the water, Chief? You tell by looking from the dorsal to the tail. What we didn't know was our bomb mission had been so secret, no distress signal had been sent. They didn't even list us overdue for a week. Very first light, Chief. Sharks come cruising. So we formed ourselves into tight groups. You know, it was kind of like old squares in the battle, like that you see in the calendar named the Battle of Waterloo. The idea was, the shark comes to the nearest man and he starts pounding and hollering and screaming. Sometimes the shark go away. Sometimes he wouldn't go away. Sometimes that shark, he looks right into you, right into your eyes. You know the thing about a shark? He's got lifeless eyes, black eyes, like a doll's eyes. When he comes after you, he doesn't seem to be living until he bites you. And those black eyes roll over white. And then, then you hear that terrible high-pitched screaming. The ocean turns red, and in spite of all the pounding and the hollering, they all come in and rip you to pieces. You know, by the end of that first dawn, we lost 100 men. I don't know how many sharks, maybe 1,000. I don't know how many men. They average 6 an hour. On Thursday morning, Chief, I bumped into a friend of mine, Herbie Robinson from Cleveland. Baseball player, boatswain's mate. I thought he was asleep. I reached over to wake him. Bobbed up and down in the water just like a kind of top, upended. Well, he'd been bitten in half below the waist. Now the fifth day, Mr. Hooper, a Lockheed Ventura saw us. He swung in low when he saw us. He was a young pilot, a lot younger than Mr. Hooper. Anyway, he saw us and came in low, and 3 hours later, a big fat PBY comes down and starts to pick us up. You know, that was the time I was most frightened, waiting for my turn. I'll never put on a life jacket again. So, 1,100 men went into the water. 360 men came out. And the sharks took the rest. June 29th, 1945. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
That was Temporary Butterfly and Read to Me on the Jaws monologue. This is worth 18 points. Big one.
Mm.
You want to start with Temp, or do you want me to start, or who would like to start?
You should start.
Temp. There was kind of a stutter didn't know at the very, like, almost at the beginning of your monologue, and I wish you had cut that out and redone it. You had some problems on Waterloo as well, I think, and it sort of felt like you were cold reading this. And it just felt like this was a struggle for you to get through. And because of that, it was kind of a struggle for me to listen to, because when you flub so early on and then don't fix it and then do it again so soon after, the monologue becomes less about the content and performance and more about, okay, is she going to be able to get through this? And it was just like there were drastic volume changes at the end. It was just kind of a mess. Your acting was good on it, but like the technical issues and the fact that you didn't go back and redo or cut out the stuttering parts really, really so much detracted from this monologue for me. What did you think?
I actually agree with, like, pretty much all of that. Like, all right, now, you were a bit mumbly at points, like, so I couldn't understand some of the words you were saying, but you definitely sounded distraught and a little manic, which I think after, like, the things that this guy went through, he probably would be.
Mm-hmm.
But the cuts definitely detracted from it for me, so.
Reed, I loved yours. You spoke very slowly. You built anticipation. I felt like you were recounting a story and not just reading. This was as good of a read of this monologue as I think. I mean, it was really good. It was better than I thought anybody was going to do, and I thought you did a great job. Malt?
All right. You're also a bit, like, kind of slurry at points, but with this, like, unlike last week, I think it really worked with it because I could still understand what you were saying. And then you had very desperate tones, and you definitely, like, drove home the point that this guy has seen horrors. So, for me, like, it worked really well. You did phenomenal on this.
Did you pick a winner?
I did.
I did as well. I picked Reed.
Me too.
18 points go to the Utterly Absurdist. They're at 140.5 now. Whew. Yeah. We've got one person on Taxi Driver, and it is Jeffers.
Ooh, Jeffers.
So he's going to get 12 points for his team, but let me set it up. Screenwriter Paul Schrader. It's the You Talking to Me monologue in his squalid walk-up apartment in front of a mirror. Taxi driver Travis Bickle belligerently delivered to the camera an invisible make-believe adversary or enemy, an indelible, much-imitated You Talking to Me scene as he practiced quick drawing with his guns, ending with the conclusion, you're dead. So we're going to hear Jeffers be a badass. Mm-mm. Let's listen.
Yeah. Huh? 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 Faster than you, you fucking son of a... I saw you coming, you fuck shitheel! I'm standing here! You make the move. You make the move. It's your move. Don't try it, you fucker! You talking to me? You talking to me? You talking to me? Well, who the hell else are you talking to? You talking to me? Well, I'm the only one here. Who the fuck do you think you're talking to? Oh, yeah? Huh? Okay. Huh? Listen, you fuckers, you screwheads. Here's a man who would not take it anymore. Who would not let... Listen, you fuckers, you screwheads! Here's a man who would not take it anymore. A man who stood up against the scum, the cunts, the dogs, the filth, the shit! Here is someone who stood up. Here is... You're dead.
Those Jeffers earning 12 points for Team Heaven Sucks.
Sounds like me when I drive.
They're at 46 points now.
Mmm.
Nobody did the Star Wars monologue.
Can I say, like, I'm not critiquing or anything, but... iTunes is set, like, so it automatically plays everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on shuffle, so I don't know what's going to happen. And all of a sudden, like, right after that monologue, it started playing something from Portal. And, like, it had, like, that crazy loud, like, sort of thrumming noise.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes, you're dead, and it goes, boom! It was terrifying.
Badass Jeffers earns 12 points for his team. Nobody did the Star Wars monologue that was worth... It would have been worth 8 points. Do you want to set it up and I'll read it?
Sure.
Do it!
All right!
Screenwriter George Lucas.
Screenwriter George Lucas. It is the Help Me Obi-Wan Kenobi, You're My Only Hope. When young Luke Skywalker was cleaning, polishing, and repairing the R2-D2 droid, he accidentally tripped one of its switches, and the mechanical robot projected a three-dimensional hologram into the middle of the room. It was a miniature image of a beautiful girl, Princess Leia Organa. In a recording that played over and over, she pleaded for help. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. From wise and noble Jedi warrior/mentor, Ben Obi-Wan Kenobi. However, it wasn't until later when Ben was located that her entire holographic message could be played. She told about how the stored secret... Okay, she told about how the stored secret Death Star... Okay, wait. This is just like, I can't even read this. She told about how the stored secret Death Star plans inside R2-D2 had to be delivered to her father on Alderaan in order for the rebellion to survive against the evil Empire. Go, Dylan!
I like how you couldn't get through Death Star plans, but Alderaan was fine for you.
General Kenobi, years ago, you served my father in the Clone Wars. Now he begs you to help him in his struggle against the Empire. I regret that I am unable to present my father's request to you in person, but my ship has fallen under attack, and I'm afraid my mission to bring you to Alderaan has failed. I've placed information vital to the survival of the rebellion into the memory systems of this R2 unit. My father will know how to retrieve it. You must see this droid safely delivered to him on Alderaan. This is our most desperate hour. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Okay.
You know, I bet that nobody did the monologue just so you could read it.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that, ladies and gentlemen. Superman the Movie 1978. This is interesting because one of the screenwriters is Mario Puzo, who wrote The Godfather. I find that interesting. Also, David Newman, Leslie Newman, and Robert Bitten. It's flying over Metropolis with Superman. This is the last one we have a battle on. It's worth 6 points. Rochelle and Spiral are on it. Lois Lane's love-struck internal monologue as she flew over Metropolis in Superman's arms next to him. First up on this one is Spiral Rochellular. So let's listen to Rochelle.
Can you read my mind? Do you know what it is that you do to me? I don't know who you are, just a friend from another star. Here I am, like a kid out of school, holding hands with a god. Oh, I'm a fool. Will you look at me, quivering, like a little girl shivering, and you can see right through me? Can you read my mind? Can you picture the things I'm thinking of? Wondering why you are all the wonderful things that you are. You can fly. You belong in the sky. You and I could belong to each other. If you need a friend, I'm the one to fly to. If you need to be loved, here I am. Read my mind.
That was Rochelle Spiral, also on the monologue. Let's listen.
Can you read my mind? So you know what it is you do to me. I don't know who you are. Just a friend from another star. Here I am, like a kid out of school, holding hands of a god. I'm a fool. Will you look at me? Quivering, like a little girl shivering. You can see right through me. Can you read my mind? Can you picture the things I'm thinking of? Wondering why you are all the wonderful things you are. You can fly. You belong in the sky. You and I could belong to each other. If you need a friend, I'm the one to fly to you. If he needs to be loved, here I am. Read my mind.
All right, Malk, you hate Lois Lane.
I do hate Lois Lane.
You like Lana Lang.
No, I don't like her either.
Fair enough. It's like me with Spider-Man, like the whole Gwen Stacy. We'll just talk about this another time. Okay. Rochelle! I felt your love-struckness. I thought it was pretty win. I also thought you did a good job of taking the read to a more real place this week, because I know in the past I've been like, you're over the top. But I thought this was more real. What did you think about Rochelle?
I actually think that you sounded a bit more terrified than love-struck. Like, I don't know if that was just me, but, like, you did a very good read. It's just, like, with some of the, like, inflections that you had, it sounded more like you were really scared.
Well, she is being flown above a city by some man who's flying through the air. Wouldn't that be scary to you?
Well, the monologue says love-struck, not scared of freaking heights. I'm sorry.
With Spiral, it felt very vulnerable to me, and I really liked that. And I thought the way that you, at the end, said, read my mind, was, like, the perfect, like, button line for this monologue. And I thought you ended it so strongly. I thought the whole monologue as a whole was pretty win. What did you think?
To me, this one did sound a little bit more love-struck, but you still sounded a bit scared to me, and I'm sorry, it's probably just the fact that I hate Lois Lane so much.
Yeah, you're too mean to Lois Lane.
I just hate her. I hate most of the cast of Superman. Okay, but you sounded, like, really breathy, which I think kind of worked because it made it seem more like you were, like, out of breath, like, kind of astounded. But yeah.
I pretty much
just on both of these, I have the fact that I hate Lois Lane.
I was so hoping, and I keep doing this to Spiral, but I was so hoping that Spiral would have done the Star Wars monologue, because she has a really unique voice, and I could buy it as like a alien voice, like in a good way. Never mind. All right, did you pick a winner?
Yes, I did.
All right, well, you've been announcing yours first online, so I'll announce mine first this time. And I picked Spiral, but it was close.
I did as well, and once again, yeah, it was close.
So, the supermental monologue is worth 6 points, and 6 points go to Team Bollywood. 34.
Go Team Bollywood!
You guys are 2 for 2 tonight. Well, you didn't totally win the first monologue, but you got points for it, so kudos. There's one monologue left. It's Apocalypse Now. It's worth 2 points. It's Axelden on it, so Team Bollywood got another 2 points for this monologue.
Nice.
So, yeah, we're going to listen to Axel now. Let's do it.
You smell that? Do you smell that? Napalm, son. Nothing else in the world smells like that. I love the smell of napalm in the morning. You know, one time we had a hill bombed for 12 hours. When it was all over, I walked up. We didn't find one of them, not one stinking dink body. But the smell, you know that gasoline smell. The whole hill smelled like victory. Someday this war is gonna end.
One, that was Axelden getting 2 points for his team.
Ooh.
After this week, Heaven Sucks is at 46, Team Bollywood 36, Team Oscar 94.5, and Team Utterly Absurd 140.5.
Nice.
Yeah, the scores continue to be worth double points from now on. I'm going to go ahead and tell you what's coming up next week in the 80s. Aw, yeah.
Aw,
yeah. 1980, The Shining. It's worth 2 points. 1981, Raiders of the Lost Ark, 4 points. 1982, Poltergeist, 12 points. 1983, National Lampoon's Vacation, 6 points. 1984, The Gremlins, 8 points. 1985, The Goonies, 10 points. 1986, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, 16 points. 1987, Roxanne, 14 points. 1988, The Accused, 18 points. And 1989, for 20 points, Dead Poets Society.
Nice.
Yes, 80s are going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you guys again for listening and competing. You guys are awesome. Thank you, Malt.
Thank you, Dylan.
While I have a captive audience, let me go ahead and announce my show, The Adventure, is casting now. It's teams of two, one who's an actor, one who's a singer. You can switch around. You can act the whole time. You can sing the whole time. But each week there's a challenge, one singing challenge, one acting challenge, and it's a race around the world, and it'll be awesome. So if you want to be on that, all you have to do is find a partner and sign up. You don't have to audition. So think about that. I've got 9 teams left as of now. So thank you guys again. I hope you guys look into The Adventure, and I hope you guys are enjoying yourself on City of Dreams. Next week, the 80s. Good night, everybody.
Good night.